This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. It's been 1 month after the mass shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and politicians, policymakers, and pundits are still talking about gun reform. My guest, Boston Globe columnist Scott Lehigh, is among those writing about new ways to think about curbing gun violence. Scott, welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So it turns out that great minds think alike because, as I said, we have been talking about looking at gun control and some of the suggestions for maybe how to go about it. And earlier in the show, my colleague Emily Rooney talked with Representative David Linsky of the 5th District, Middlesex District, who's planning to introduce some legislation involving a number of things. But one of them is the main thing that you're writing about, which is insurance. As a way of gun control. Talk about your idea, and now, I guess, Representative Linsky's idea as well.
Sure, sure. I should say, this is not my idea. This is an idea someone called me to pitch, a former Navy commander who retired, who has a lot of interesting ideas, and he called to suggest it. And since then, I've been in touch with a couple other people who have written about it, including one gentleman named John Wasik, who has treated it, I guess, and wrote about it for some business publications. So it's an idea that is making the rounds in a couple different places. But the way it would work would be that if you, as a precondition to buying a gun, you would need to get a liability policy for that gun, and it would be for the damage that could be caused by the gun. So you would, have to go and go to an insurer who would do some assessment of you and the kind of firearm you wanted, and then write your policy for it. So you pay for the policy, then you would take this, some certificate of insurance, and whether you went to a gun show or a dealer or a private seller, you would have to present this proof that you actually had some liability insurance for the gun. And the idea here is that it would add a sort of a private market assessment of the risk of the firearm. If you were a hunter and you, say, had a bolt action 30-30, which is a big game rifle, but people in this area use it probably not in Massachusetts, but in Maine and New Hampshire and other places for deer. But it's a gun also that you have to, a rifle that you have to kind of individually reload by manipulating a bolt and moving the bolt back, and which takes the old casing out, then putting it back forward and in place and puts a new casing in, so it doesn't fire anywhere near as fast and it's not as lethal. And if you were insuring a gun like that that had only a limited magazine, so there weren't that many available cartridges to put in at any one time, you'd have a lower premium, probably nominal. But you get up to what we call an assault rifle with a large clip and that fires very quickly and high muzzle velocity. And what they call a pistol grip, which is a rifle that has a grip on it, so you don't need to put it to the stock to your shoulder like you do a traditional deer rifle or big game rifle, but rather this is something you can hold at your waist level and kind of spray fire. If it were that kind of gun, or that ammunition for that kind of gun, it would cost more. So your policy would serve as kind of a detriment. Right now, risk for guns is what economists call an externality. It's you and I bear. Someone buys a gun, you and I bear the risk if the gun is misused or if it's stolen and used that way. This would, almost like air pollution, weirdly, in a way. We talk. It's cheap to pollute if there's no penalty for it. So this would put a kind of a market premium on the danger of the gun. And I think it would discourage. I mean, some people, clearly some of these young crazy men who are involved in these massive school shootings just would not be able to get an insurance policy. An insurer would look at them and say, now, why is it you want this kind of gun or that kind of gun? And they wouldn't even try. So that would act as a little bit of a big deterrent that way. But also the policies would cost more. And if you wanted a 22 rifle to shoot gophers in your yard, that wouldn't cost much. But a high-powered military type of weapon, you know, not an automatic, obviously, because we don't sell those, but a high-powered military-style semi-automatic, like the guns that are used in so many of these tragedies, would cost more, and the ammunition would cost more. So it would be a disincentive two ways, because the person wouldn't probably, you know, crazy person wouldn't apply and wouldn't get a policy, and secondly, it would cost more for that kind of gun. So it's kind of a private market solution.
I am speaking with Boston Globe columnist Scott Lehigh, and he has proposed a solution, a possible solution, as we are all talking about possible solutions to really to gun violence. So we're throwing around gun control and gun violence in the same way. And if the objection is to reduce the amount of gun violence, then gun control may be one of those ways, but there could be other ways. And Scott Lehigh, in his recent column, has suggested that a marketplace solution, of having insurance companies insure those who have certain kinds of weaponry, the more intense the weapon, sort of like the Bushmaster, would cost more to insure, and the others would not, is a way to go. Now, something that I thought was very interesting said, and remember I mentioned that Representative David Linsky is proposing a bill in the Massachusetts legislature coming up soon, and one of the things that he's paying attention to is this insurance methodology, and he focused on part of this would be to make sure that there is a safe gun and ammunition storage, and you mentioned that in your column. I didn't realize that some states have that and others don't, and that if one had an insurance requirement, as you're suggesting in your column, one of the things that would have to be clear is that those gun owners who had insurance would have to demonstrate a safe storage.
Yes, and we have such laws in this state. Some people read my column as saying we didn't, but we do. Obviously, it would be far too intrusive to say that the government will come into your house and check to see the way you stored your guns. A lot of people would just have a huge problem with that. Frankly, I would have a huge problem with that. It just seems way too intrusive. But if you had to say, if your insurance company said, okay, you want an AR-15, well, to get our least expensive policy on that, you've got to have a gun locker and you've got to have a separate lockbox for the ammunition to make sure that this rifle can't be stolen, or that no one but you or someone with a key to your stuff has access to it. You need to present proof of that. Let's say the lockbox and the safe cost you together, I'm just throwing out a number here, but $1,500. That would be cheaper over time than paying the additional insurance premium for not having the safe storage. So yeah, people would be much more inclined to get the safe storage, and you would have to present, say, let's say, a receipt and maybe photos or that kind of thing to get the policy for that. This is obviously a little bit of a blue skying this idea. It's not all worked out, but this is conceptually how it would work. So then because an awful lot of guns stolen in this country, and then guns would be much less likely to have been stolen. And then you think about the Newtown thing, perhaps Lance's mother would have stored the guns differently if she under that kind of occasion. Maybe, I mean, this is all, again, just conjecturing, we don't know, but if she had the gun in a locker and the ammunition somewhere else, and she knew her son had some problems, maybe he wouldn't have had access to that. But possibly it wouldn't have happened. Now, I don't, nothing's foolproof, and you can't ever say for sure this would prevent all or most gun tragedy. But I do think it's fair to say it would put the incentives in the right place. People wouldn't any longer have an incentive. They would have a disincentive from acquiring a whole arsenal. Right now, Kelly, you could go out and say, my handgun, wouldn't mind having a handgun, wouldn't mind having a rifle, wouldn't mind having this, wouldn't mind having that. And there's never really an incentive to get rid of any of these guns, so they hang around and people get a small arsenal. If every gun costs you a little more, you might say, well, okay, I want a .30-06 because I'm doing a little deer hunting, but I don't necessarily think I need my you know, my Glock anymore, or you know, this gun or that gun. So it would sort of array the market incentives, I think, in the right direction.
And also, I think Scott Lehigh of the Boston Globe gives you, you know, there's still some discussion about do we do background checks, do we not do background? I mean, you know, an insurance company, to your point, is not going to give you some insurance without some kind of background check going on. So you would have at least that also as a part of this.
Yes, plus you would. Right.
You'd have the storage thing as a part of it, and you'd have the cost relative to the kind of weaponry that one would purchase. I just want to mention that this has been an ongoing conversation we're having here on Boston Public Radio about curbing gun violence. And last week, I was speaking with Dr. Darush Mazafarian, who wrote a piece with some others about lessons from public health, about changing behavior as a way of controlling gun violence. And though they were talking about taxation, much in the same way that tobacco was taxed, and then people sort of got in the habit of having to pay more for it, and then, you know, behavior changed accordingly. Yours is not a taxation, but it's, you know, akin to that in this insurance method. And so it's a little bit of the bottom line of it is, as he was saying, is you get two things at once. You get some instant response, and you get some over a long time behavior change, which is what public health is all about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I got to say, you know, I have a number. I'm in Maine a lot, and I have a number of friends up there who are hunters. You know, one of my friends who's in his late 70s claims to have gotten a deer, you know, almost every year for 40, 50 years. You know, and they're some friends who are more my own age who go out hunting, and they don't look at this. I ran this by some of them. They don't look at this as a ridiculous idea. I don't think hunters. I don't think your average sportsman thinks that this would be, and their guns wouldn't, frankly, they would not be that expensive to insure, because someone doesn't go out and commit an atrocity with a bolt action or a lever action, you know, 30-30. That's not the weapon of choice here, or a 308, or, you know, 30-06, or the guns that, I don't know where you grew up, but the guy, if you grew up rurally, the guns that particularly the latter two, the 30-06 or 30-30, was sort of the popular deer hunting, or what other places they call big game rifles. And so I don't think it would threaten hunters. Now, there are some people who have guns because they think the Second American Revolution is coming, and you know, it might threaten them, but again, it's not a government inspector coming in. It's insurance. It's saying, guys, you got to take responsibility here. This is, you know, with rights come responsibility. So, I do think it's an approach that works in, you know, a little bit much better than sort of intrusive. Now, I should say, I'm also someone who favors complete background checks. I don't think you should be able to. I don't believe you should be able to buy a gun from me, or from a gun show, if I were a private dealer. I mean, from me, or for a gun show. From a gun show anywhere without a background check. And I personally think the background check should include a reference or two. So if someone says, look, Scott, you know, if I had to get one, my friends know I'm nuts, they would say, geez, I won't give you a reference. And they might say, hey, I'm worried about Scott. He's looking around for a reference for a gun. Why? And, you know, maybe if they do give a reference, as a gun shop owner could call and check and say, hey, you know, I mean, what about this guy? Whoever's doing the check. So I think references, a little bit of a verification that you're not a troubled young guy who's thinking of shooting up a school, are also important in this process. But I do like the insurance idea, because I think it's a little outside the box, and I don't want to take credit for the idea because it was suggested to me. But I think it moves in a different direction, and is something that much of the sporting community would be receptive to.
Well, as I said, great minds think alike. So you came up with this idea from someone who suggested it to you, and so did Representative David Linsky earlier today, talking to us about it. And who knows, it may be a part of Vice President Joe Biden's task force report tomorrow. We shall see. But in the meantime, thank you so much for speaking with us, Scott Lehigh.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kelly. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I've been speaking with Boston Globe columnist Scott Lehigh. 1 month after the mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, we're reminded how chronic gun violence is in some communities. 13-year-old Gabriel Clark was shot in Roxbury on his way to choir practice. We're going to look at what it will take to put an end to these kinds of shootings that have become much too common a part of city living. I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio.